because that diagnosis scares the heck out of people and makes women really stop in their tracks, this information gets them moving again, and movement creates stronger, better quality bones.
It does. It's interesting. You're never at zero risk of fracturing, but if you do the right things, you reduce that risk and you allow yourself to do more active things without having such a high risk.
Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am Debbie Robinson, your host and guide on your Stronger Bones lifestyle journey.
My next guest is Dr. Nick Birch. Nick studied medicine in Cambridge and London and started working as a junior doctor in 1985. Following orthopedic surgical training, he started specialty practice as a spinal surgeon in 1996. He continues to have a busy non-surgical spinal practice. In 2018, Nick founded OsteoScan UK with the intention of offering high-quality bone health assessments locally rather than in a hospital setting using the Echolite REMS system. Since then, he has carried out over 2,200 REMS scans. Nick is the spine specialty editor for the Bone and Joint Journal and is a non-executive director in several medical technology companies developing innovative treatments for back pain and biological systems monitoring. Nick is married and has two grown sons. His leisure interests include wood turning and motorcycle riding. Nick, welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am looking so forward to hearing what you have to share today. It is so wonderful to have you back.
Thanks, Debbie. It's lovely to be back and to be able to have an opportunity to have a chat again. I just came across literally in the last 48 hours. Do you know much about melatonin?
So I think there's a lot of confusion. I'd love you to clear this up. Do you know that it's illegal? It's prescription only outside of the US. So will you please tell me about this? I have people taking massive doses. Will you talk about that?
I have no idea. The only place I ever get it was when I come to the States. And usually it's to try to prevent jet lag on the way home across the Atlantic. But I just came across a study that looked at the use of melatonin in rats to effectively reverse osteoporosis, which I thought was quite interesting. And that then sent me down a rabbit hole yesterday, and I found a whole bunch of stuff that I wasn't aware of. And these are mostly researchers in the US, and there's some fantastic studies out there showing that the use of melatonin is very helpful for particularly postmenopausal women, because it restores the sleep-wake cycle, the circadian rhythm, which is so disturbed by menopause and by the lack of estrogen. But it's what you're saying earlier about inflammation and oxidation and stuff like that. And melatonin is a really powerful antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. So it seems to be a particularly good medicine, which has got very few side effects. And it may well be one of those things that has just been hiding in plain sight for a long time, but it might be really important. And certainly for all your listeners and followers in the States who can get it very freely, then it might be something to consider in terms of what they do in their daily diet, particularly postmenopausal women. We all have a drop off melatonin after the age of 40, 45, and it gradually falls off as the pineal gland in the brain stops producing it. Yeah, so it's interesting. It was a new bit of information for me this week, and I thought I might share that with you.
Okay, I love that. Can I share something with you? And I'd love your mind and your research to even go further. 2017, I sat with a neurophysiologist in India at a science research yoga science center, Kavila Dham in South India. And honestly, he was talking so over my head for a lot of it because he's super bright. He explained the shape of the brain, and he was talking about jet lag. He talked about the shape of our brain and the angles at which the sun hits the retina throughout the day, and that they were researching that the angles at which the sunlight hits the retina actually ionizes melatonin, that melatonin cannot be utilized by the body unless it's either, it might be the sulfation process or ionization. And I didn't look too much further than that. So I found that intriguing, that daily light exposure at different angles. So he was telling me that when you do go somewhere, some other country, and I've done this ever since, look at the sun in the new place you are. Now, it's going to take a couple of days for our biochemistry to actually shift. It doesn't happen immediately. That cortisol, melatonin dance that takes place, to look at the sun at different times of the day so you can actually receive it at that and allow that ionization. So that's one thing that I am so intrigued by that I learned in 2017. The other is that melatonin is actually processed, or whatever, I don't know the correct terminology, metabolized in the gut. And it's actually two metabolic steps from serotonin to then become melatonin. So then the gut and the health of the gut is going to play a role in the metabolism of melatonin. And I'm not sure about usable form for our body. I don't know if you know anything about that, about usable form.
No, I'm a newbie to this, and so I'll report back in due course. But I was just fascinated by it because it just put together so many of the things that I've been thinking about recently: poor sleep and poor, you're right, poor diet, poor microbiome, and dysbiosis, and really all of that together. And one of the things that stuck out in the couple of papers I read was they said, you know what, the treatments for osteoporosis, they're not that good, are they? Because they've got lots of side effects and women continue to fracture at higher rates, even though there's lots of treatment out there for osteoporosis. And it was it was an interesting comment to make on the approach we have to osteoporosis, which is so unidirectional. You have a drug, it's going to cure this problem. No, because this problem is so multifaceted. Unless you actually then approach it in a multifaceted way. And that was really opening my eyes to thinking about bone health. I've had a pretty holistic view of bone health most of my career, and more so recently, and certainly in terms of diet and exercise, as we've discussed. And then suddenly think, well, actually, that's true. I mean, what is it we're missing in our bodies? In the postmenopausal woman, you're missing estrogen. So let's replace estrogen. You're also in the older person, you're missing melatonin. So let's replace melatonin. What other things are we missing? What other things are really important for our bone health? And that's the thing that we should be looking at. Not just saying, I want a drug to get me better, because that's the shortcut. That's the easy thing. I just want to take a pill. It's actually, what are we missing in our lives? And how do we fix that?
I know what we're missing. So from mouth to bone, what we eat that becomes the building blocks of bone, when the outside world, which is the gut, we bring in food, we need to first digest it, whether we're chewing enough and allowing amylase to start breaking down carbohydrates. We get to the stomach. Do you have enough hydrochloric acid? Do you have H. pylori that is alkalizing the environment and not digesting? Then when the substance goes into small intestines, is it in the right breakdown phase in order to trigger bile secretion by the gallbladder, elastase 1, or other digestive enzymes by the pancreas? And then your microbiome, do you have the commensal bacteria maintaining your mucosal barrier? Or do you have too much opportunistic species that are you feeding the good gut microbes? Do you have leaky gut, which allows the food to get in, triggering inflammation, toxicity, the endotoxins, lipopolysaccharides that are secreted by the dysbiosis? And so you have the acidity, not to mention the acidity. Are you eating a high animal protein or an acidic diet, thinking that you need that? And so all of these factors, I see the seven root causes as inflammation, acidity, toxicity, mineral imbalances, hormone imbalances. I don't know if I said stress, and being sedentary. Yeah. So those factors are all in the gut. The estrogen metabolism, the endobiome, I don't know if you've heard of that term, endobiome, is a new area of research in the gut, which is where estrogen metabolism is taking place, and probably other hormones. Also the metabolism of cortisol with elevated chronic stress levels of people, there's all of this. So I see from a holistic approach that unless you make sure that the pathway from mouth to bones is optimized, then you're going to have a negative domino effect on many of the factors that lead to bone metabolism.
Well, I think you're spot on in the sense that it is a very complicated process. There are lots of different parts involved in it. I'm in my journey, I'm just beginning to explore some of those. You're way, way ahead of me, which is fantastic. And I'm very happy to learn. And every time I have these conversations, and it's with whichever patient I see who's got that particular expertise, it's always the nutritional expertise that to me opens my eyes a little bit further. Endobiome, I hate these neologisms. These these new words people create. Genomic was bad enough, and then balome or whatever it is people are talking about. I hate them. Why don't they just say hormone processing system? That much makes much more sense.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. But it's really the intelligence of this body here, that we're here today because every single person that we came through survived everything they had to survive. This is such an intelligent body and mind complex. We're never going to research that in a lab, especially the way that we do this double-blind randomized control where we're holding everything constant, which you're not going to hold. You can't contain a moonbeam in your hand. You cannot contain aspects of human body. So the way that I think the problem is all of our scientific research that we're hanging our hat on, because we go in with such a narrow focus on one area that we put the blinders on so much that we don't see what's happening over here and here.
You mentioned that when we spoke last, and I thought I'd been thinking about that. And of course, the reason why, and it all came from chemistry, and that is what the definition of a fair test. So the definition of fair test is you keep all reagents equal except for one, which you vary. And because it's a simple system, so you may only have 4, 5, 7 components or whatever else. If you vary one, you can see what the effect of that is quite easily. If you've got 14 trillion different things going on inside your gastrointestinal system and you vary one thing, the chances of actually seeing an effect is going to be, I think, rather small. And I think you're absolutely right that it may well be that the randomized controlled trial for anything that has to do with nutritional elements of health in general is just the wrong mechanism, because it's never going to be able to detect the sorts of changes that we would recognize as being useful and healthy. Yeah, is science wrong? Partially. It's never been a perfect way to look at the world, and I think lots of people know that. It might be the least worst bit that we've got, though, the least worst mechanism. And the question is, how else do you look at systems that are so complex?
Yeah, and exactly. And how do you get the quality and the standardization around that? And that's what's happens. But back to how we began talking about melatonin and postmenopausal women and sleep. I have courses. I do Healthy Gut, Healthy Bones is my course that I really run now. And I run a stool lab so I can really see what's happening in the gut. And I also do a hair mineral for minerals. But what happens is once the ladies implement the lifestyle that's necessary, whether it's the dietary shifts, it's the supplementation to manage what was found and discovered in their custom labs. Once they start to make those shifts, and one big one, because stress, they say, leads to all disease, or 80 to 90%, but it's going to really be all. One thing is that we are consumers, not just of physical things like food. We are consumers of information. The optic nerve takes in so much information, and that's ultimate safety goal is of our bodies to be safe. So what we hear, what we see, what we smell, what we touch, what we taste, all day long we're consuming. We don't realize that, and we don't digest, absorb, assimilate, and especially eliminate all of that. So when you work on stress management, I tell women, stop eating the news before bed. So stop watching TV. And one of the things when we check in at our 2-month session or 1-month session in is one of the big things is bowel movements are getting better. So we know that their system is working because they're doing dietary shifts and supplementation, but they report that they're sleeping better. And one of the things they tell me is, Debbie, I'm not doing the news like you told me. I say it's like being flogged or stoned. You're putting yourself in the middle of the town and you're allowing the stones to come at you. Who killed who? What are they taking away from you? What are we losing? What don't we have? What's going on with inflation?
I think you're right. It's the 24-hour news. And the problem with that, of course, is you're bombarded by people who think that you need to have more and more of this stuff thrown at you. And I think turning off the device, and I've never been a user of devices in bed at night, and I don't have a phone by my bed. My phone stays on my desk in my office from 6 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the morning. So 6 in the evening till 5 in the morning when the dogs wake me up and want some breakfast. And so I don't look at it for 11 hours a day. That's fine. And if there's a message and I haven't picked it up, so what? Doesn't matter. I pick up on the news first thing in the morning when my brain's fresh. But by the end of the day, that's out of the system. That, if you like, that process of excretion has happened. And I don't particularly worry about what's happened today. So I think you're right. And I can't remember if I mentioned it last time around, but I'm sure I did. There was a study on looking at rats and saying, you know, if you create anxiety in rats by taking out a bit of their brain, you develop osteoporosis. So if you've got stress, if you've got anxiety, you are going to have yet another negative effect on your bone health. And of course, it has a negative effect not only on bone health, but also on every single system because you have systemic inflammation.
Straws on the camel's back. How many of them are there that's going to finally break the camel's back? And so we have to remove the straws, even identify what they are. It's multifaceted. And so we start off with, we get a DEXA scan score that scares the heck out of you. We need the food. So you definitely need the food. That's the two things that are going to build bone is the vitamins, minerals, and amino acids, and the mechanical stimulation. So we need to demand more every single day. Yoga, I think, is the best. Or like you mentioned last time, your wife gardens and you have dogs that you're out. So it's that activity, it's movement. So we get that, it's those two things. And so you have to optimize food to bone. And that's why the gut really plays a role here. And in even the foods you bring in, we can't eat dairy, we can't eat gluten. I just did another podcast interview with a physician on Monday. She's quintuple certified. I'm like, oh my goodness, not to mention a million other things. And she was like, no dairy. I said, yes, thank you. Thank you. Because really when medical doctors speak, Nick, women listen, or I guess people, but my community is mostly women. But it is, I believe the power is really there, that the shift will happen at this level. And that's why I'm so happy to see the orthopedic surgeons looking for other methodologies of really understanding not just density, but toughness and quality of bone tissue.
It would be very nice if the whole of the orthopedic community actually did start to move away from, if you like, the sort of the unitary, oh, that's your DEXA, that's your density. I agree. It's fine. But we know it, as I say, because we operate on people and we fix bones. So we know what bone is tough. And so it's a short journey, I think, for an orthopedic surgeon with his or her eyes open. The problem is if they don't have their eyes open.
Yeah, there's another orthopedic surgeon I follow on Twitter, and he's always talking about nutrition. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'd love to hear this. That was amazing what you just said. That made me think of, we have a DEXA scan, which is okay, looking at bone, looks at it, but not great. Then we now have that REMS ultrasound technology to look even deeper. But even deeper than that is the orthopedic surgeons that are actually in there looking at the bone with their own eyes or feeling the squishy aspect of putting screws and things into bones and how soft are they. So really, it is the orthopedic surgeons that ultimately have the best view of bones, better than any of these devices.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about Wolf, because Wolf is an orthopedic surgeon in Berlin in the back end of the 19th century. He was the first person who did the experiments on bone and showed that loading bone makes bone build and become more dense, etc. And I think he actually understood it wasn't just about the amount of stuff there, but it was about the build quality. And because for exactly the same reason you said about the different angles of the forces going on, he knew that if you loaded a bone differently, you'd produce a different pattern of bone building up. So it can't just be about the amount of bone. It has to therefore be the quality. And we all, as orthopedic surgeons, we in our training, we know an awful lot about material science. We know about things like the breakability of bone, ductility and softness, and all those other words that sort of, you know, are used for describing materials. So it's a short step. Really, it's a short step for orthopedic surgeons to lead the way and say, yep, we've now got a new technology. We can then really make a proper diagnosis instead of a sort of a guess, which is, I think, what densitometry has been for 40 years.
Yeah, because it scares the heck out of women. It scares them into being not movable. They do not move anymore. They move less. Use it or lose it. And Right. The diagnosis contributes to more bone loss. And then forget about the other side of this, where you start to deal with biochemistry, with medications, false sense of security, not really healing the gut and the absorption and assimilation of the nutrients. And so it is. I think that the power to make this shift lies in the hands of the orthopedic surgeons. And I'll interview them and I'll put women into the healthy gut programs to heal their guts. And that's what we'll do.
Absolutely. That'll be an interesting conversation So find particularly the orthopedic surgeon that you found on YouTube, who sounds as though they've got a fantastic view of nutrition, and get them onto your podcast and get them out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing more and more. And you too, you are like a wealth of information, but it's really refreshing for us women to actually learn this from you and hear your experience. This is your life experience, and you're explaining that this is what you've done. And then you're really, especially the last podcast we spoke about, you talked about those 10 important nutrients and you talked about the lifestyle aspect. So that's refreshing that your prescription is lifestyle based for stronger bones.
Well, thank you. That's a nice compliment. And I think the key to that is that I can't remember if I mentioned it to you, but when I trained 40 years ago, very much as an allopathic physician, and that is that I've got a medicine, I've got a surgery, and I can cure you with this, et cetera. We didn't have any lifestyle medicine in those days. It just did not exist. There were practitioners, but they were considered to be off there somewhere, far in the weird parts of the world. Nobody talked about nutrition. Nobody talked about diet. Nobody talked particularly about exercise, unless you were going down to play sport or do stuff. And as time has gone by, and as the world has become, I think, more educated, so the importance of actually what we're doing to our bodies and what we're eating and how we're exercising and how we are consuming, as you say, consuming information as well, because that's become as important in many respects. That has become really the key to the way I practice now, and it's become much more naturopathic. And I'm, in many respects, I go back to a lesson I learned when I was in medical school, and that was that if you've got a person on more than five drugs, you can't possibly know what all the interactions are, and you'll just poison them because you'll give them more side effects than actual effects. So don't have what's called polypharmacy. Don't put people on too many drugs. And I still see quite a lot of patients coming along, and they'll give me their drug sheet, and they're on 7, 8, 9 drugs. And the classic one, of course, is that they've been told they've got osteoporosis, so they're put onto a bisphosphonate, and then they get gastric side effects. So then they also got calcium and vitamin D, but then they get given a proton pump inhibitor, PPI, because the proton pump inhibitor turns off all the acid, and of course, therefore, they can't absorb the calcium. So the calcium goes straight through. So that means that's no good. So they're not no calcium going to the bones. And then the hyaluronic acid is doing what the hyaluronic acid does and carries on. And of course, it's just a mess.
Yeah.
Actually, what is the interaction between all these different drugs? And if you do that on top of somebody who's also got 2 tablets for high blood pressure and maybe something for type 2 diabetes and maybe something for this and that or the other, yeah, that's a prescription of 8-10 items. That's crazy.
Yeah. Thyroid, fat metabolism or cholesterol, and osteoporosis. I see a correlation in almost very high percentage of women I work with, 75 plus. They're all metabolic. They're all about internal imbalance. Mm. We're so focused on external balance with osteoporosis. We work on that, standing on one leg, strengthening our balance. Yet it's that internal balance of bone metabolism that we haven't focused on. And medications are trying to manage one aspect without looking at the cause. They're trying to put the Band-Aid on the loss, but they're not looking at all the factors that contribute to loss or stopping them. So there's still loss happening.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that the root A medicine, by and large, will have one effect and many side effects. So therefore, if you've got something that's multifactorial, you have to have multiple medicines. But of course, then you've got huge numbers of side effects. Yeah, so I have become less keen in many respects as I've got older on giving women A medicine for something about this very complicated system, and that maybe the drugs for osteoporosis are not working quite as we would like them to work. I'll send you a cartoon. It was actually in it's an American cartoon, and it's basically a hospital, and it's got two windows, and one says drugs and surgery, and the other says lifestyle choices. And the queue outside the drugs and surgery is huge, and the queue outside the lifestyle choices is zero. And it was basically a Mickey take of modern medicine. I think it applies.
Yeah. The problem is the line for the pills is what health insurance covers, and the other line they don't. So then they have to seek out practitioners like myself, and then usually it's out of pocket. So that's where medical companies need to get more into that preventative because it would be cost effective and everything's about dollars. So really, if they really thought about it, if you prevent those big costs, then you're going to have more money, which is the motivation. So hopefully we'll get to that point.
Well, hopefully. The National Health Service in the UK is very similar, and that is that it's too busy fighting the bushfires at the moment in front of it. And that is, how do you get waiting lists down and how do you get cancer sorted out and emergencies dealt with? And of course, it hasn't got any time or resources to go into preventative medicine in any serious way. And unless we actually start to move things around, then we're never going to really sort these problems out.
That's true. Okay. As always, it is so wonderful to speak with you and the information you share. I hope that millions eventually hear this because it helps that there's what, 200, is there 200 million cases of osteoporosis maybe in the US? I'm not sure what the figures, the recent figures are, but because that diagnosis scares the heck out of people and makes women really stop in their tracks, this information gets them moving again, and movement creates stronger, better quality bones.
It does. It's interesting as a final thought, and that is that you're never at zero risk of fracturing, but if you do the right things, you reduce that risk and you allow yourself to do more active things without having such a high risk. And many people that I see look at the results of the REM scan and say, okay, look, my results are showing that I've got a tough bone. I said, yeah, you've got a tough bone, but you fall hard enough, you've still got a fracture. So you've got to make sure that you keep it as tough as it possibly can be. You've got to work on it. And it's not just one thing. So it is very much, it's a mechanism of whole life management. And you have to keep on going and keep on going. And there's no reason why somebody in their 90s can't be as strong as somebody in their 30s. They just have to work harder at it.
My mission is to empower women, to help women, to help them naturally take control of their bone health. That is my goal.
But also, I think you point to a problem in modern society, and that is that we are seeing people who are getting more and more closed-minded rather than open-minded. More people are not able to take a position whereby they say, actually, you know what, there may well be as much on this side of the argument as that side of the argument. Where is it? Where's the evidence for it? And how do I make a judgment for that? And one of the things I've always done in my career is try to say, okay, if I see something right now, I'm not going to necessarily believe it and take it at face value. I'm going to question that. And I've always been quite contrarian. And when I was at high school, in my chemistry and physics, we had to have a project. And so I decided what I would do was not take for granted the values of what was in the textbooks for various organic substances, that if you burn them, they produce a certain amount of energy. I decided I'd make a device that would actually test it. It's called a bomb calorimeter. So I found an engine from an old disused motorcycle, which I adapted. And by the time I'd blown up half of the chemistry lab, I actually found that the textbooks were quite right, but I wanted to know for myself. And that really set me on a path of questioning. And it continues today. And so it's, I think if all of your followers and listeners can take away from any discussions we have, and that is the understanding that there are lots of different ways to look at the world, but there are certain things that are really important in your life, just on a daily basis, and getting the right amount of sleep, the right amount of exercise, the right diet, get those right. A lot of the rest of it just falls into place, and you feel better. You function better, you think better. And I think that we become better human beings as a result. And really going back to how we were millennia ago, when we were out there on the steps and doing what we were doing, rather than having televisions and iPhones and internet and stuff like that. But then we could have never had this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to appreciate technology for what it is. Internal balance is the key. And the body's ultimate goal is homeostasis, to find that internal balance. And we need to support our body in finding homeostasis. And really, it is such a healthy body, or being in a healthy state. We have so much healing potential in our bodies. We need to give our body what it needs to find that balance.
Spot on. Yeah. Getting that balance. And one of the, I think, things I appreciated when I was going through medical training and then subsequently becoming a consultant and attending orthopedic surgeon, was the lack of balance. And that is that you're very focused on one thing. So your career is there and you've not got balance. But it's been the last 10 years since I stopped operating. I've had a much wider view of the world rather than this very narrow view there. That's really when the blinkers have come off. And I thought, hang on a second, yeah. It's not really very healthy that I get up in the morning and then I know what I'm going to be doing every single moment of the day. I'm rushing around because I've got too many things to do, too many patients to see, too many patients to operate on, et cetera. And then I'm worrying about the results of it and I'm not giving myself the chance to do the things I should do. And that's when I stopped operating, that suddenly, the blinds fell away from my eyes. And I realized actually that what you've got to do is just slow down a bit. And just take time and do the things that are going to give you balance. So I think I came to that conclusion 10 years ago. I think what you've done is to put it into words that makes complete sense. I think I realized then, but didn't have those words. But I think you're absolutely right. It is internal balance of all the things and making physical, mental, spiritual homeostasis.
Yeah, those are doctor's orders. Those are doctors. Who a doctor that's in the spine bone, in the hip bone, seeing it firsthand in a focused manner, and then coming out and realizing what are all the factors that we need for bones. How that's better than any DEXA scan, any REMS scan, and that is firsthand knowledge of bones.
Yeah, I think just as a final note, then there's the best way to test your bones is to fall over and not break.
That's what I say. My goal is to help people be bendable and not breakable.
Yeah, exactly.
And I tell them, I want to help you be a better faller because you're going to slip, trip, stumble, and fall. And I want to help you be better at that so you don't break when you fall.
Absolutely. Yeah, learn to fall properly.
Always so wonderful to speak with you.
All right.
All right, Nick. Have a great evening. Thank you. All right, thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Bone loss is not an inevitable part of aging. We don't have to just wait for it to happen. There is so much that you can do. And that is what you will learn each week on the show. Go to my website, debbierobinson.com, if you want more information about what was shared in today's episode. At the bottom of this episode in the show notes, there will be links to whatever was shared. Please subscribe to this podcast. Share this podcast with your friends, your family, or any women that you think may be interested or benefit from the information we're sharing. Please rate the podcast. And if you have any questions you'd like asked or answered, I would love to hear from you. Let's do this, ladies. Let's change the way the world views osteoporosis and slow down, stop, or reverse our bone loss, take charge, and show other ladies what is possible. Thank you so much for joining me.